Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we get news from the gaming industry to discuss, and maybe games even from the gaming industry. How novel an idea. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad to be joined again for the first time in 4 months. Where have you been, Ed? Even more than 4 months. How's it going? How was your E3?
Yeah, it was great. I got to watch it from afar, I'm sure like a lot of people did. I thought the E3 was great this year. Combination of Microsoft just putting forth one of the best showings I've seen from them in the past 5 or so years, and then Nintendo absolutely stealing the show with the number of games that they announced had 2019 release dates, and just it was just overall a really positive, good show for the entire industry, I think.
Yeah, I have heard a lot of people who said they weren't super impressed, and I mean it wasn't the best E3 ever. I agree, but I think, as I mentioned in the last episode, for those who haven't listened, I think the fact that it was the prelude to next year's complete overhaul with the next generations made it a lot more than just palatable. It became fun for me. And it was like, okay, so this is what we get before the big one next year. If there was no perspective of, anticipation of next year, I might have been a little bit less enthused. But as it stands, I really had fun. And we also got the gift of Game Pass, which I think we're going to talk a little bit about a few things post E3 and something we might have missed, things that are interesting, and then more news. But I think for me, the biggest element remains Game Pass, especially now that I have had an opportunity to enjoy it. What are your feelings on Game Pass?
I've talked about this a little bit with a couple people, but the idea of subscriptions becoming a commonplace in games, because not just Game Pass, but also Ubisoft announced their Uplay Plus subscription as well, and then obviously there's Stadia and stuff. But
Stadia not being a subscription, which is ironic, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I think it is.
No, it isn't. That is part of the... That is part of the incredibly confusing messaging that Google delivered, yeah. Which I have theories on why that is. But no, there is no Stadia subscription. There's going to be Uplay Plus on Stadia. Yeah. And that's my theory, that they're essentially providing a white box service for other publishers that don't have the technical capabilities to provide a streaming service. You know, Uplay is the first one. I'm guessing, I wouldn't be surprised if EA followed suit with their subscription service. And, you know, who knows? Bethesda, Square Enix, any other.
Yeah, so my point of all this is that the existence of all these streaming services has really...
subscription services.
Did I say that? Yeah.
You said streaming, but I think you meant the subscription.
What's
services.
Wrong with me? Yeah, subscription.
It's fine.
Services.
You just woke up. It's like 6 a.m. Yeah, where exactly. You are, so that's fine.
But yeah, the existence of all these subscription services has really exploded over the last couple of months, even. And the ability for the average gamer to spend, hey, I want to drop like $10. And I want to download the latest game from this this publisher and play it as soon as I download it. Like, that's kind of mind blowing that's even an option anymore in the world of $60 games. I mean, obviously the publisher doesn't want you to cancel the subscription after you're done playing it. But the fact that that's available to you is really, it's kind of democratizing the ability to play a lot of newer games. And the hopes of the publishers is that you play a game and you really, really like it and you want to keep playing it more and more and more, especially the games of a service kind of games. And then you stay subscribed for forever. But the fact that you now have this option to possibly not do that is kind of cool, I think.
I agree. And I think there are a lot of people who think, oh, well, this is problematic for the value of games and for the amount of money that developers are going to get. And I understand the concern, but I really think these things have a tendency to work themselves out. And if, let's say, let's talk about Microsoft, whose service is a little bit more expensive because it includes Xbox Live and everything, but essentially for, well, I guess on Xbox you can get it for $10, and if you want the Ultimate, it's $15. But for $15, if you stay subscribed all year, that is interesting to you because you get a lot of games, but it's also worthwhile for Microsoft. Obviously, everyone is rushing into this system because they get the equivalent of, what is it, 3 games guaranteed to be purchased in their house from you. So they have the money of 3 games, and it's also paid directly to them without maybe some retailer that's in the loop. And I think that money gets redistributed internally, of course, but also to other developers to garnish their service because they want games from others. It's different. Yeah, of course, there are going to be winners and losers, but I don't think it's necessarily worse from an industry standpoint and from a revenue for overall for the industry.
Yeah, and that's not even counting like having a subscription and playing games that are cheaper than that, you know. You're all of a sudden you're paying for $12-15 games instead, you know.
Yeah. And you're playing them when you might not have played them. And also I think people, you know, so you might not have played them and the developers presumably get money for them when they wouldn't have otherwise. And it might change the nature of the games as well a little bit to an extent, but because, you know, people, the developers will maybe try to grab you as quickly as possible so you continue playing because you have a plethora of games available to you, more than you had before, which is kind of mind-boggling. But again, what I keep saying is that the business model of games have always informed the game design. Some people say, oh, the money is going to come in and muck up the way that game designers want to do the thing that would be pure art otherwise. And that is obviously ridiculous. I mean, of course, there are instances where things are mishandled because of financial concerns, but the idea that games and business model wouldn't inform the design of any art form really is ludicrous. A popular art form, and even in video games, you know, used to be a time when, I always go back to that example, it's not the only one, but it's the most potent, I think, you would put in a quarter every 2 minutes to keep playing in your arcade, right? And the games were designed to make you die every 2 minutes. And that was pure game design. And that, you know, so anyway, I'm not overly concerned about all this. It's going to shake up things a little bit. But I also don't think everyone is necessarily going to be subscribed to those game passes. I looked up the subscription numbers for PlayStation Plus, which is not necessarily as good a deal as the game passes, but it's also a lot cheaper. But PlayStation Plus, over an installed base of PlayStation 4s of about 100 million, not quite, but almost, and I don't even count the PlayStation 3 installed base, because let's leave that out, but PlayStation Plus is about a third of the installed base. I think the latest number we have is 36 million. So I don't know. I guess around that number would be reasonable to expect for subscription services for different publishers. And that's still a very low number compared to the amount of gamers that exist out there. So there will still be people to pay games full price. So I don't know. I think the doom and gloom is a little bit over. Not doom and gloom, but there are some concerns which I understand, but I don't necessarily share a certain certainty of. But
I mean, I think the biggest benefit out of this is less like the first party games or even second party games, but like the third party indie games that are joining this are going to get a little bit more of a highlight. Like, I think that I am more likely to jump into it to an indie game that I'm kind of interested in if it's on Game Pass, because I don't have to do that initial purchase and a game that's like completely unproven, you know. Like before I heard about how awesome Hollow Knight was, I was a little nervous about just jumping in and buying that game right away, but then like playing like 5 hours of it, I realized, oh my god, this is like one of the best Metroidvanias ever made, you know. So
Yeah, and in that case, you know, so let's talk about what I did over the past couple of weeks. I got Game Pass. I'll tell again the trick that I used to get it really cheap. For the people who haven't heard it, I've mentioned it on a couple of other shows, but essentially, when you subscribe to Game Pass Ultimate for the first time, Ultimate is the one that includes PC Game Pass, Xbox Game Pass, and the Xbox Live service. So it's the whole package, and it's $15 a month. But when you first subscribe to it for $1 for the first month, they convert all of your months of Xbox Live Gold and existing Xbox Game Pass into months of Game Pass Ultimate. So one for one. So if you have 12 months of Xbox Live Gold, you will get 12 months of Game Pass Ultimate until your next bill comes in for the service. So, of course, what a lot of people did was they went out and purchased a ton of Xbox Game Xbox Live Gold and then switched. And so that amount was converted. And I did that. So I essentially got, I think, almost 3 years for half the price, or even less than that, a third of the price. That is crazy value, obviously. And it's really clever because it pushes me to look very seriously at the next Xbox console, because essentially I'm already an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscriber until 2022. So when next year comes around, I'm probably going to be looking at I'd be looking at the two consoles anyway. And by the way, I have a theory. Ed, tell me if this is crazy. But this is such a good deal. I think Sony at E3 2020 is going to try to emulate it somehow. And here's my theory. We can put it, you know, on paper, on hard drives for people to go back to and check out at that point. But I think they're going to release Death Stranding and get people to buy it full price. And I think they're going to release The Last of Us Part 2 early next year and get people to buy it. And then E3 comes around. And they say, hey, everyone, PlayStation Now is reworked. Of course, it lets you stream the games that are in the library, as it always has. And you can now install them, just like Game Pass. You can install them as well. And we now include all of Sony's first-party games and some additional games. They bring it up to the level of Game Pass. And it includes Ghost of Tsushima, which is coming out in, whatever, September. That would mean that a similar, you know, and we will transfer in the same way the amount of game time you have on PlayStation Plus into that super PlayStation Now up to a year. They don't have to do it 3 years like Microsoft did. So what does everyone do? They rush out, get PlayStation Now Plus, or however it's called, for a year, cheap, and they are similarly locked into Sony's service as they are to Xbox Game Pass. And Sony announces their new service and their new console, of course, and that will carry over to PlayStation 5 or whatever it ends up being. Ed, how crazy am I?
I mean, I think that Sony definitely needs to take a new approach to PlayStation Plus. Like, PlayStation Plus was the best subscription service during the time period where, like, you got free games, right? So, like, people are now giving out, like, Epic's giving out free games all the time, the Humble Bundle subscription service. But PlayStation had this slew of PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Vita games, and they were all, like, pretty good. Like, there were some months that was kind of so-so or whatever, but in general, it was a pretty good deal. Now, they're only giving two games out. Just two PlayStation 4 games. And the most recent month, which was the first month where they had just the PlayStation 4 games, people looked at it like, wait, I get Borderlands the Anthem Collection? Like, that seems kind of a late time to add that to the subscription. So,
because of the Borderlands 3, I think some people.
I get it, but
Borderlands a few years ago, when they were essentially trying to catch up to Microsoft, they were giving away, like, super high profile games every month. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So just the idea that they're going to kind of combine the two subscriptions together and also make it so you can, I know you can now, but install all of the games that are available on it. All that.
Can you already install them? I didn't realize.
I think you can install some of them.
Okay. Some of them. I think right. The ones that are on your PlayStation 4. Maybe that's already the case, which would make the transition to what I'm talking about even easier. But yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it's just some of the older ones. I don't know. But it'll be nice to be able to install, because no matter how good I think streaming gets, I think there's always going to be issues. And just when you're already dealing with like buggy games in general, maybe it's better to not have to deal with buggy streaming as well, you know? So
sorry, I'm confirming the PlayStation 4 games you can download and install, if I'm understanding this nomenclature right. So it's already the case. So I think they'll just add first party games, all of them. And
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. But that's my point is that I kind of agree with you that Sony needs to do something to kind of elevate themselves back up to the top in terms of their subscription services, because right now I think it's kind of lacking and not being looked upon as I think Sony in general is kind of being looked upon nowadays in the industry as kind of being a little bit of the bad guy, a little bit of the lazy person since they're in first place. And so if they're not careful, they're going to start losing some of that brand loyalty to Microsoft, I think.
I think so. I'm certainly looking at Microsoft in a very different way now that I have Game Pass.
Yeah,
and sure. I think E3 2020, what the thing is with Sony, they don't want to just give you their biggest game, The Last of Us 2, inside a subscription service when they can sell it to you first and then offer it to everyone afterwards to earn points. And I think that's what's going to happen, because they need to get into that subscription service action beyond what PlayStation Now is currently, which is back catalog. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but that's my prediction. E3 2020, subscribe now when you get everything, including Ghost of Tsushima, when it comes out in, you know, September. But
yeah, I'm also like a little hopeful, I guess, that all these subscriptions that are required to play online will just kind of become a thing of the past, especially since like always online connectivity is like almost necessary now.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to pay to play online because you're always online. Although, as I said, you know, the latest numbers on PlayStation Plus are 36 million at the end of the year. And that's a third of the installed base. So there are a lot of people who don't have PlayStation Plus, a large majority of them. They just, you know, have their console and probably play FIFA and they're happy. Or, you know, Maiden or Madden, whatever you people play in the US.
Or they use it as a Netflix box.
That's a little bit expensive for a Netflix box. But so I do want to say a little bit more about Game Pass Ultimate. I've had it since E3, and I can't remember who said it like this, but they coined a way of expressing it, which I think really embodies what or illustrates how I feel about it. I knew it was good intellectually, but now that I've had it, I know it's good emotionally. Like I actually love that service. And just going in and seeing all the awesome games that you want to play, which are, of course, many, but I think an even nicer surprise is, as the thing you mentioned earlier, it's that there are so many games that I would have liked to try out because they're in the conversation at the moment or whatever, and I hadn't because I didn't want to, you know, I knew it probably wasn't going to be my thing, but I didn't want to shell out even a small amount, you know, $30. There are like five games like that every month that I would like to give a try. And I know that most likely 90% of it are probably not for me, but it's still nice to actually give them a try. And with Game Pass, of course, it's not every single game, but it is some of them, especially since we're talking about a back catalog. So what I did is I went out and tried Ori and the Blind Forest. Really nice game. Metroidvania. I kind of got the gist of it, so I didn't keep playing because I know the next one is going to come out soon-ish. Rise, Son of Rome, I had never played. By the way, this got me to plug in my OG Xbox One, which had been on the shelf for, I don't know, 2 years now or more. I tried Void Bastards, which is weird and interesting. I tried Astroneer, which is not my thing at all. Like, these kinds of exploration games, not for me, but I tried it. You know, I kind of have a vague idea of what it is now. I tried Outer Wilds, which I'm going to keep playing because everyone is so in love with it that I need to see a little bit more than what I have seen. I played for maybe an hour, maybe two, but I do not get the hype around that game at all. Have you tried it?
No, I bought it, but I haven't actually played it yet. But because I did play it at PAX, actually, now that I think about it. It's a weird one. But it's kind of cool, the idea that the world resets every hour or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit shorter, but it's, I mean, I'm not going to talk about any spoilers, but the everyone loves it. I don't think I've heard a single reviewer or journalist talk about it without like emotion in their voice. And it's a game where, you know, you're on a planet and you get into a wooden spaceship essentially, and you travel from planet to planet into this one solar system, and every distance is like super tiny. To go from one planet to another, it takes maybe a minute of traveling in space. And
it's pretty cool. You have to deal with like physics and stuff. Like, you have to slow down your ship by turning yourself around and accelerating in the opposite direction and stuff like that. Kind of thing.
Yeah, it is a little bit physics heavy. Like, I crashed more than I would like to admit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And dying in this game is part of the loop, as you kind of mentioned. But I get the charm of it. But I've only played for an hour. But for that hour, I'm like, okay, I guess this is nice. And I'm sure this is going to be another Nier Automata thing, which everyone hates me for not liking it. Actually, that's not true. Nier, I actively disliked. This one, I'm just like, all right. Well, I don't get it, but it's charming. But anyway, maybe there's stuff that happens afterwards and I'm going to discover it. But so I tried that one too. I tried Onrush, which, boy, this is a video gamey game, and it's super fun. Like, Onrush, this is a tragedy that it didn't get more. Actually, it's a tragedy that it didn't get more time to cook. There's such a fun core to that game. Do you know what it is? What Onrush is?
No. It looks like it's a car race game.
Yeah, so it's essentially when did it come out? It was maybe 6 months ago, I think. It was last year, June 2018. It uses the mechanics of a racing game. So essentially you're driving on a track and you have competitors and you have a boost that builds up when you do stuff. So doing stuff like pushing off competitors or jumping, you know, doing jumps and stuff like that. And you can boost. And when you have used enough of your boost, you have kind of a super boost, which is kind of your ultimate. And you have different kinds of vehicles that have different properties in a semi-Overwatchy way. But the interesting thing is that it is not a race. It just uses the driving for many different types of challenges. So you have two teams, and for each different challenge, they have a different goal to achieve. One could be boost more than the other, reach the time of boost that's set quickly, more quickly than the other team, or go through the gates, you know, the time check things to gain time, and you gain 2 seconds each time, and the counter goes down, and when it reaches zero, the team that reached zero has lost, and stuff like that. So it's not like you have laps or even an end goal. It's just you keep driving, and you're doing this thing, and you have like fodder cars that you can bump into that are almost mobile-like. And honestly, it is pure gamey fun. It is just fun. And, you know, whenever you get Game Pass, give it a try. It's so sad that everything around that core gameplay is ironically rushed. Or, you know, they looked at Overwatch and they were like, oh, cool, you know, business model will like sell skins and animations when people win, except oh, every one of them is like ridiculously bad. It must have been like, you know, they went to their animator and they were like, dude, can you do like 672 animations for the game's release? And he was like, it's coming out in 2 months. We know. Just, you know, whatever, do it and it will be cool. And he's like, it's so... Anyway, so the core of the game is really fun. I'd encourage everyone to give it a try because it is absolutely a fun core thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was resurrected somehow by the same company. I think it was Codemasters. It's like part of the fun of... what's that game where... you crush everything, that racing game. Ah, brain fart.
Burnout?
Yeah, Burnout. And it's kind of parts of the fun of Burnout, but without those annoying racing mechanics. So it's...
Are the same guys that made the F1 and Grid and Dirt Series. So.
Right. So, yeah, anyway, so I got to try that, which was fun. But then you'll never guess which game I actually played.
I will guess because I know the answer and I've heard you talk about it, but...
Damn it. Okay, well, it's Gears of War 4, which I never thought I would have enjoyed. But it turns out, you know, I started it as I have so many other games in Game Pass, and... It was fun. It was like, I can see how if I had gotten it in 2015, what was it? 2015, 2016, I would have been pissed because it's like, it is so rigid. The game design is incredibly stuck in the past. And it is like, move on, arena, a little bit of, like, yeah. you walk in between each arena, a little bit of banter, and then, oh, there come the other ones. And they're aware of this, so they're joking about it between the characters. And it's like that divided in chapters for 9 hours or 10 hours of game time. It never deviates from that there are, like, almost tower defense-y types of chapters, which are not great, or like missions. And there are, the end is kind of fun, where you get into a giant mech and wreck everything. But it is super rigid. I did enjoy the characters, though. It was well acted, pretty well written, a little bit too much on the nose on the humor side, but fine. And I kept playing because I wanted to see how Kate, one of the main characters, becomes what she is in the trailers we've seen for Gears of War 5. And have you played Gears 4?
No, I played Gears 1 and Gears 2.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and I like the games. It's just, you know, it's all the things you said. Like, I wasn't sure if I was ready to jump back into Gears I wasn't sure I was going to have that good of a time with that $60 purchase.
Yeah. I mean, let me spoil it for you. If you played Gears 1 and 2, you played Gears 4. It is exactly the same thing.
Okay. It's like the enjoyment I got. Like the gameplay loop is kind of like Halo a little bit, where like you fight a bunch of enemies, then you go to the next place and fight a bunch of enemies, but the appeal of Halo, I got out of like the multiplayer and stuff, and I never really got that appeal out of Gears as much. I have a friend that really loves Gears and played it as soon as it came out and stuff like that, and really enjoys the multiplayer, but it just wasn't my thing, I guess.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been. I mean, Gears 4, I joked on Twitter that it was kind of fun in an archaeological research way because the game feels like it was made 10 years ago. But it's fine. It's okay. It just ends so abruptly. The end is like, honestly, it's almost in the middle of a sentence. Almost. Like, they're like, oh, and this is amazing. And it stops. And you're like, wait, what? What is the... And it relates to what's been shown from Gears 5. But anyway, I hope they change.
It reminds me how I felt about the end of Halo 5, where it ended just like that. And it was like, well, I guess I had to wait for the next game.
Yeah, that is a little bit frustrating. But it's nice that we get to see Gears 5 in just like, what is it, 3 months or four mm-hmm. months? And it
comes with Game Pass.
Yeah, exactly. So I will definitely be playing it. At least, I mean, it looks like it's done that... it's taken that step forward that it couldn't with Gears 4, and it's become a little bit more mature. We'll see what actually happens. But and I rewatched that trailer from this year from the Microsoft conference with Kate's face being like divided. I thought it was amazing. I really liked it. I thought it was very atmospheric, obviously. But I really hope they update the game mechanics, because it is so 2006. Like,
yeah.
the gunplay feels very approximative. Like, it is, maybe that's what Gears is, and people who enjoy it for that. But in a world where Destiny exists or where Borderlands exists, it's rough to come back to that very imprecise gun handling and gun feel.
Interesting. I always would describe Gears gunplay as like kind of methodical, I guess. Maybe more the gameplay than the gunplay. Like,
yeah.
You're kind of walking nice and slow, and you feel very, very dense, and then you snap to a barrier so you can fire over cover and stuff like that. But you're saying that the gunplay feels very kind of not great in comparison.
Yeah, I think it lacks precision. And that has a little bit to do with controllers, but I play Destiny on a controller, and maybe it's the different kind of snapping. You know, it snaps to the target in Destiny, so it's aim assist. Gears 4 has no aim assist, like none.
Right.
And, you know, I know some people might say, dude, get better or whatever. It's possible, but it on a console with a controller, if you have zero aim assist, it is rough, for me at least. So anyway, I'm looking forward to Gears 5, but the point is, Game Pass Ultimate is, I mean, Game Pass in general, extremely cool, extremely cool. I recommend it to anyone. Oh, and by the way, Nintendo is keeping an eye on video game streaming, which doesn't mean much. And Square Enix has said that they would love to make their complete library available digitally. Some of them they don't have the actual code for the game but I wouldn't be surprised if that comes to, you know, how awesome would it be if I could get game streaming for Nintendo titles as well? A $15 a month subscription to all Nintendo games? I would never unsubscribe, ever. I would be subscribed until the day I die, right? So, I don't know. Well, maybe $15 a month. You know, that's becoming a lot of subscriptions. I understand that. I think the way it's going to work is that you're going to have one subscription main, and then rotate between two or three additional.
Yeah.
And not all of them should be $15. Some of them can.
And you're saying your mainline subscription is going to be Nintendo. You've already decided.
Right. Exactly. well, ironically, maybe not. I think it would need to be one that also has a lot of third party, because the developers' games is the backbone, but you still need some meat on that bone.
I mean, so far Nintendo's support for third party on the Switch has been very strong, so I don't see why that would be any different in a subscription service that they would offer, but.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would want the subscription I'm married to, though, to have games like, you know, Assassin's Creed, maybe, or those big third-party games, which they might be on. So I might need to go get Uplay Plus or something.
So you're trying to do, like, an F, marry, kill kind of thing on your...
Yeah, basically.
Got it.
So I guess marry would be Sony... F would be Nintendo. There's that passion. And kill, who would it kill? Maybe
Uplay or EA.
Well, right. maybe EA. Yeah. Kill would be EA. That's correct, actually. Bethesda is the secret fling I have on the side, because they have some cool stuff too. And you know, if Assassin's Creed keeps being good, then that could be my other... No, so Xbox would need to be my secret family. And oh my God, it's getting too complex. I want everything. I just want everything. Yeah, so... All right. GOG. God, what does that stand for? Good old games. You know, GOG Galaxy is the web store and client for Good Old Games, the online store for games that are a little bit older sometimes, but not necessarily. But even more importantly, DRM-free. They are a product of CD Projekt, which is the company, the Polish company behind, well, that kind of is a sister company to CD Projekt Red, which is the developer, of course, of The Witcher and Cyberpunk. GOG Galaxy 2.0, we heard about a little bit, but it seems like it hasn't made a lot of noise. They're kind of pivoting. What they want to do with GOG Galaxy 2.0 is, on top of the store that already exists, kind of bring together all of your games from all of the different services into one interface. So the way it would work, we haven't, you know, it's in closed beta right now, and it seems like it's going to go into open beta pretty soon. But the way it works, which we hadn't had details on until E3, and I was very curious about, is that you actually have to log in to all of the different services to get the information on the games. They were very strongly... saying that it's very privacy conscious and they don't store any of that data beyond what they need to operate the service, and they delete it anytime you log out from one of the services. But let's say you want to use it. Let's set the privacy conversation aside, even though it's important. But let's assume that it is privacy acceptable. That might be a big if, but let's still assume that. You log into, let's say, PlayStation Network, Xbox Live, Nintendo, Steam, Epic, which all provide APIs. They will have to work with CD Projekt to agree that they can be used, but according to CD Projekt, they're talking about all of this. And when you log into all of that, it populates all of your games from those services into the GOG Galaxy interface. And you can select them and view them in different ways and filter them. And you also get interconnected with the chatting of all of those services. And arguably, you can chat back and forth with all of them. What do you think about that, Ed? Is that something you'd be interested in?
So, like, I didn't quite realize how expansive they're being with this this client. It kind of solves a lot of the issues that I've been kind of thinking about recently in games, about how fractured things are, and like you have like five clients on PC now, and the ability to kind of bring those all into one place is really neat, and man, it'll be really cool to have, like, especially cross platform chat and friends lists and stuff like that, to kind of see, oh, let's see what everyone's playing, you know.
Right. I think that would be pretty cool. I don't know if they seemed confident in the interview I saw. I'm not sure how friendly the different services are going to be to this. I'm sure Microsoft will be, because they want to be everywhere. Sony, maybe not. And others, it's debatable. But I think there's definitely a need for something like this. As you said, we have many launchers. Our game collection is fractured across many different services. And I'm sure it's even happened to many of us that we wanted to play a game, or maybe we even bought a game that we didn't realize we had from, you know, whatever, Xbox Live Gold or PlayStation Plus from 6 months ago or 2 years ago even. So yeah, I think there's a need for this. Absolutely. And I think GOG is well positioned to do it in a way that would work. I think there was an opportunity for Discord there that might have been squandered. But yeah, GOG Galaxy, they could do it. And I don't know that I would necessarily 100% trust them with that information, but I would probably trust them more than I would almost any other entity, I think. So
I mean, well, like, what are they going to get out of you authenticating your other accounts? Like, your game data, I guess? Like,
yeah, I don't know. If as long as it's going through the official APIs, it's fine, because they can't really mess with it too much. But they can still do some things and send messages. And I think a leak would be an issue, you know, a breach that I would be concerned about. I don't know. I think if it's well done, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, proper API, standards means that they don't actually store your passwords or anything like that. They'll just store like a token. But yeah, I guess that token could still be used no matter what. But
no, you're right. I mean, if it's done properly, it should be okay. It's just privacy concerns, you know, the Facebook scare. Yeah. Like, they would know what everyone is playing all the time, right? They would have all of the information about all of the games. And they've said, we don't want to use that information. We will not use it. Like, this is really a convenience.
And then they'll sell it to politicians to abuse. I don't know. Like, oh no, this guy plays WoW all the time.
Yeah. So I don't know. There are always some concerns, because they would have you log into every service you use. So there is a lot of information there, but
right.
Yeah. I mean, they're in Europe, so they would have to comply with GDPR for European customers, at least. So that's one concern squelch, kind of. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It's going to be an open beta. They were hinting at post E3, so I'm guessing not too long from now. So we'll see. And the last thing I wanted to talk about concerning E3 is the conversation about crunch, or conversations rather, about crunch that happened during that show. There were many companies that addressed it, that addressed the issue, I mean, and many companies that were expressing the ways in which they were trying to avoid crunch and make the working conditions of their employees better. And I think this is one of several examples where this is the direct result of the tenacity of investigative game journalisms who are having a real effect on the industry and who are, taking the companies that deserve to be taken to task. And that is admirable. And I think it is showing, there are many examples in which the gaming journalism is the best it's ever been, just like games in general. But this is one example. And it's not necessarily even about Gamergate, which I think their contention with game journalism was always bogus. But there were legitimate concerns maybe a decade ago about many things. And it's not perfect. It's not like everything has been fixed. And certainly there are issues with influencers to maybe a larger extent than journalists today. But I think our industry is growing up and the media is growing up as well. And this is serious. This is like, you know, it's not world politics, but it is the serious issues, the serious side of our industry, which is being covered properly. And I think this is not just admirable, but I did want to mention that, look, it's game journalism is it's doing extremely well. And again, the best it's ever been. And the issues, I'm sure some people could point to some, I think are few and far between and being addressed appropriately. So I guess it's a feeling of pride of the way our media is conducting itself, in spite of what a few angry YouTubers would want you to believe, because they want to generate clicks with outrage. So
yeah, I mean, I think that the angry YouTuber people are like definitely in the minority of the voices now. I think that the majority of people are kind of happy and glad that a spotlight has been shown on crunch culture in the gaming industry. It was always one of those things that was kind of known, you know, like as a someone who went to school for programming to kind of maybe get into gaming, I was kind of like shied away from that, just kind of looking at the industry itself and how much crunch was such a part of the industry culture. And
really, that was a factor in you.
Oh yeah. For sure. Really? It's actually a factor for a lot of people that I know and talk to. It's like, well, I wanted to get into making games maybe because that's where my real passion is, but you know, I didn't want to have to subject myself to the crunch and the 80-hour work weeks and stuff like that. I would prefer to work in a corporate company and probably get paid more, have better benefits and all that stuff. So, it is something that is definitely at the top of young computer science students' minds, I think. But it never really broke out into the greater mind share of the industry, both as consumers and as producers of these games. And so I think that you're right when you say that the games journalists definitely like contributed heavily to that mind share being increased and people kind of coming to terms with the fact that, yeah, sure, Red Dead Redemption was a great game, but there was definitely a lot of crunch culture at Rockstar when they made that game, you know?
Yeah, and it's, you know, we've seen it in I think there were maybe five major articles over the course of the year. I want to say denouncing, because they were denouncing, but really they were just, for the most part, very plainly stating the facts they had acquired. And of course you need to understand, you know, the lens through which they were seeing this and acquiring them, and maybe some people were disgruntled, but they were very honest in that way. They weren't trying to manipulate it to make you think a certain thing. And you know, there was Rockstar and CD Projekt, and at some point in France there was the issue with Become Human. Them.
Yeah, Detroit.
Studio. Yeah. Oh my God, brain farts. I'm furiously Googling right now.
Quantic Dream.
There you go. So yeah. Anyway, I think it was really exemplary work, and fair work, and it is starting to have effects. And of course, it takes time. All these things take time, and it's systemic issues which can't be fixed easily. So. Yeah, there's this. There's the issue of female representation, which is also being discussed in a much more. I think we've come into a much more calm and rational mind about all of this. We're talking about issues and a little bit less, as strange as it might seem. Of course, there are always people, you know, as we said, who are angry. But I you mentioned there's less anger. There are always angry YouTubers. I think that's, you know, a consequence of the business model of YouTube, that get money when they get clicks. But these conversations, I feel, maybe it's the people I listen to, have kind of integrated the general industry talk, and we talk about them and they're like, yeah, it's because of this. Oh no, I disagree about that. That's taking it too far. But yeah, this could probably be done in a different way. And not necessarily two camps yelling at each other, which
right.
Of course, I'm sure it still happens, but overall. Yeah. All right, that's it for E3. Anything else you wanted to add to the post E3 thoughts?
No, just other than the fact that I'm excited. Breath of the Wild sequel had me on the tip of my chair. Just so ready for that to be a thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of the biggest thing for me.
I also lost a little bit of pee. Oh, by the way, talking about Zelda, I played Cadence of Hyrule.
Oh yeah. What do you think of that?
It's fun. It's pretty good. I didn't expect it to be as Zelda as it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the general through line for a lot of coverage and people playing the game for sure.
Yeah. It's I expected it to be a Crypt of the Necrodancer Zelda skin, and it really is a Zelda game with crypt mechanics.
Yeah,
which is a very nice surprise.
I think there's a little less puzzle element. I mean, that's kind of the highlight of a Zelda game is the puzzles and stuff. There's less of that than I think a normal top-down 2D Zelda game would have. But the mechanics of the puzzles being how you defeat the monsters is kind of a cool spin on things. Yeah. And I mean, I'm having just a blast playing it. You know, at first it's kind of like frustrating because I kept dying and stuff like that.
Me but too.
once you kind of get to the jive of it, I still think the little jelly monsters, the choo-choos or whatever, I still think they're the most frustrating enemies to kill without taking damage.
When they split in half two,
they surround you and you're like, oh, where do I go? And yeah, but overall, I'm having just a blast playing the game. I'm playing it pretty much whenever I get the chance to this past few weeks.
Yeah, I want to play it more, but again, I have so many games now. good problem to have.
I'm like the perfect time because I'm on a 2.5 week vacation, so I don't have access to a PS4, an Xbox, my PC, or anything like that. So it's just Switch.
Just Switch all the time for me. All right, so other bits of news that we will run through a little bit more quickly. Okay, let's not get back into the entire controversy about loot boxes, but everyone's been talking about the fact that, who was it? A legal counsel for EA was being heard by the a committee from the UK Parliament, and they said that the mechanics that they were offering in some of their games were not loot boxes, they were surprise mechanics. They don't like the term loot boxes, but rather they think of them as surprise mechanics, which is, of course, incredibly infuriating because
it's such a marketing thing, right? Like someone in marketing was like, let's try to think of a different name for loot boxes if we can. Loot pentatus. No, that's too real. Surprise mechanics. Great. Let's use that. Let's run.
Yeah.
With that.
I think it was someone in the legal department who wanted to get away from the charged loot box term, which of course is ridiculous because loot boxes, it's not like it's a different term that existed somewhere else that was applied to games. It was a game defined term. Like literally you have boxes and you have loot. Loot is from games. It's not like from somewhere else. Anyway, so they wanted to get away from it and made some comparisons to Kinder Eggs and stuff like that, which okay, I get we've talked about this many, many times, and I don't want to get back into all of that. What I will say though, they mentioned, we do think the way we've implemented these kinds of mechanics is quite ethical and quite fun. I'm probably the person in everyone I know that is the least angry about loot boxes, or at least the person who says there are ways of implementing them in a way that works. My prime example being Overwatch, and I think that's the best student in the class. But even then, I personally don't think I... So there's one thing to keep in mind here. I think loot boxes, and that's something that a lot of people don't manage to separate. Loot boxes, as a game mechanic, I think they're fine when you earn loot boxes for activity in-game. Getting a box that you get some items you can use with is great. And you don't, you know, there's this fun aspect of, oh, am I going to get something? That aspect, I think, is fun and ethical. The fact that you can earn them in game. Arguably, if you can earn them in game, even if they give you an advantage in the game, it's probably fine. The problem comes when you have to pay for them. And that creates, that opens a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And that is where the issue comes from. I think as a game mechanic, first of all, they would exist a lot less if you couldn't pay for them. The existence of the loot boxes is to monetize. I understand that. But as a mechanic, the surprise aspect of it, I think, is kind of exciting to an extent, I mean, because you might get
randomized loot has existed like since
right
like old school RPGs. Like the concept is fine. It's just when it, like you said, when you can pay extra money, you kind of get into this weird kind of ethical stance
right.
of where it's the lines are obviously drawn between gambling and loot boxes. Like how could you not draw those lines?
Well, so this is another thing. Just to address one thing you just said, in RPGs like World of Warcraft, bosses are essentially loot boxes. That's what they are.
Yeah,
you hack at them and you hope that you get the thing you like. And there is some pleasure. I mean, it's the whole point. Like if you got the item you wanted all the time, it wouldn't be as fun. Like there is this...
It's like a difference in business model. Like they want you to keep going after that boss so that you keep feeling like you have to subscribe. But
yeah, like, but I also think if you talk about the gaming fun, like if you simplify the argument to the extreme, if... In World of Warcraft, you just walked to a guy and he handed you the sword you want, it wouldn't be fun. And similarly, if you went to kill the boss and they gave you the sword, I don't think it would be as fun. Like you kill a boss in a dungeon and you always get the loot that you want. It's not the same. Of course, it plays into wanting you to stay subscribed and giving you stuff to do for days and months and years, but it there is an argument about the fact that it's not as fun. The gambling aspect. So anyway, my point was going to be the fact that you can pay for loot boxes, it shifts that conversation. And I'm not sure the ethical statement that he made fits quite as well. But the gambling, he says they aren't gambling, and we disagree that there's evidence that shows they lead to gambling. They aren't gambling. I think there are elements of gambling, but the key difference, which a lot of people would agree about, is gambling. When you say gambling, it charges the term and means, you know, things like you end up selling your house to go to the casino. And obviously that doesn't happen with games. So I think the differentiation between loot boxes and gambling, I honestly think it's fair. I think when you say gambling, you bring a lot of other meaning with you
it's
with
like,
that term, right?
It's like the you're not necessarily gambling because it's not the same thing, but the psychological effect of gambling is the same as loot boxes, I think.
Yeah, I think that's debatable because the motivation for gambling is that that hope that you're gonna get that you're gonna be rich and
you're gonna get more money that you're spending.
Right, exactly.
So it's a direct monetary transaction versus this is more of a normal transaction for a good, you know.
Yeah, but I understand there are also some elements because you're hoping you will get that epic skin, you know, or the epic weapon or whatever. But I think it's such a different scale that I think it's a little bit pushing it to say, oh, it's like gambling. I honestly don't believe that. And the other thing is when he says we disagree that there's evidence that shows they lead to gambling, that is the real a real political concern. This is what these committees are studying. And they don't know much about gaming. They're hearing, oh, loot boxes are gambling. Like, wait, this is gambling? What are you getting our kids to gamble? And in their mind, they're thinking about casinos and people losing their houses, right? I'm assuming, but I don't think that's it. You know, when they
or
say
losing their parents' houses.
Maybe. When they say there's no, you know, when the EA exec or lawyer says there's no evidence that shows it leads to gambling, again, I'm sorry to the people who hate loot boxes. I think they're on their way out. I really think, like, I don't really love them. I could completely live without them. And I think they're on their way out. They've become completely tainted, except in some EA games that are specifically like FIFA and stuff like that with FIFA Ultimate Team, where I really think that a lot of people play them and have no problem with FIFA Ultimate Team and like collecting the players through card packs. Anyway, my point is, there's no evidence that shows it leads to gambling. When have you heard about some kid getting loot boxes in whatever, even FIFA, that went out and started playing on a, you know, in a casino? That is honestly, I think, an assumption that is completely
wrong. Haven't been around long enough. Like, they haven't been around long enough to be studied to fully find whether there is or is not a link yet.
Okay,
so that's
fair enough.
Part of the problem. So I do agree with you that it's a little, it might be a little much to legislate on something that might not be a thing and that it needs more.
I mean, honestly,
studies,
Ed,
I do think,
honestly
I
think that
right.
It could lead people to gambling. Like, getting loot boxes in Heroes of the Storm would lead people to spend $1,000 at Las Vegas, and as if they didn't need, they needed that to go spend $1,000 at Vegas. You think there's a relation there?
I don't, but I don't have the psychological like body chemistry that gambling really affects, you know?
Okay. I think a lot of people are saying that it is, you know, it is so like gambling that it is as dangerous and it kind of
right.
leads to gambling. And so anyway, honestly, that is a side thing, but I think if some people think it leads to gambling, the point is there is no
evidence. I think you're right that there are a lot
right?
of people that are uneducated in the gaming like world that are trying to form opinions on this.
Right. And I think that they're conflating their hatred of loot boxes, which again, I understand, with gambling in a way that is not very.
It's like there's uneducated people on both sides. There's like people that are looking at the gaming that know the gaming, but don't know the psychology. And there are people that know the psychology, but don't know the gaming kind of. Everyone's forming a kind of a group think opinion over it.
It might be, yeah. But you know, there are very nice people on both sides of that. Anyway, so
that's not politically charged either.
At all. But yeah, so bottom line, loot boxes, I don't think, are going to be a big thing. They aren't. They're really Gears of War 5, Gears 5 has said no gear packs, no loot boxes, nothing like that. Like, I can't count
Shadow
the number
of War,
games. Yeah.
That Shadow War game, like, has completely removed all those mechanics from their single player entirely, you know? Like,
yeah, I can't really think, except for the EA Sports games, which, again, it's a lot of older people. That I have no evidence for, but I think I have never heard people complain about FIFA Ultimate Team before. And I know a lot of people who play it. But beyond that, I think loot boxes are a thing of the past anyway. And even with all my contradictory thinking, I would think that's probably not too bad if they disappear, period. All right, what else? That was longer than I thought it would be. Bloodstained is out. I don't have it yet, but it's coming to my Switch hopefully this week, I believe in a couple of days. So I'm happy
with
that.
Yeah, it's supposed to ship tomorrow, I think, for Switch backers.
Cool. Bloodstained, of course, Symphony of the Night-like game by Igarashi, Koji Igarashi.
Got some good reviews.
Yeah, it got some good, like... This is a sequel, kind of a spiritual sequel to a game from 20 years ago. Reviews,
yeah, but way,
which is
way better
what
than,
we wanted.
Than what the Mega Man spinoff or spiritual successor
game true.
Got. So,
yeah,
I think it's an example of a Kickstarter video game actually going very well versus some of the other examples of it not going.
Yeah,
so well.
And it was touch and go for a little bit. They corrected a lot of the graphics. It was pretty cool, and they it seems they're delivering exactly what they promised, which is cool. So, I hope I'm going to be happy. Ubisoft mentioned how they're doing all of the characters from Watch Dogs Legion. Apparently, they are doing, on the voice thing, something that we speculated on, which is essentially recording maybe 20 different versions, different people doing all the dialogues, and then modulating that, which is interesting. But even more interesting is the faces. They actually modeled, they used photogrammetry, which is essentially turning pictures into stuff. And are you gone? You can't hear me? All right, we're back. It seems Cloudflare is having issues, which made issues happen for Discord on my end and Skype on your end. So now you're on your phone, but it's working and we can record. So perfect. We can finish the podcast.
Hooray.
We are podcasting professionals. We'll do it no matter the conditions. I was saying Ubisoft photogrammetrized photos for the faces. Like the voices, they're modulating it. We understand how that works. But it seems for the faces, they took pictures of many different people and then composed faces with parts of faces from the ones they took. So they have like thousands of unique faces, which I thought was pretty cool.
So, yeah, that's kind of neat.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about mobile a little bit. We have a Dr. Mario coming in July for Android and iOS. It plays a little bit differently, but it's Dr. Mario. We have Harry Potter Wizards Unite that launched essentially already on iOS and Android. Auto Chess, the Dota Underlords, is available on mobile as well. There are some other numbers which don't matter as much. Anything you're looking forward to? You're running around being a little wizard from Hogwarts already?
No, but I did hear that that game was actually a pretty strong Pokemon Go like clone. And
it's the same company too. It's Yontic Labs.
So. Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. But so if you're into Harry Potter as much as people were into Pokemon, then go for it. I heard it doesn't have all the growing pains and hiccups that Pokemon Go had. Since it came out years after the Pokemon Go did. So
right.
Definitely worth a try if you're interested in that kind of gameplay again.
Yeah, it would make sense. They already knew what they were doing. And I saw the trailer, and the trailer made it look like a mini site, like fan fiction of Harry Potter, which wasn't too badly put together. But then, you know, it lasts for a minute and a half with people running around in London and whatever. And then you see the game, and it is obviously nothing like what that was. It felt a little bit like, oh, all right, well, I get why you didn't show the game. But I've heard from a lot of people that they're enjoying it, so maybe it's fun. I don't, you know, think it's for me. But another thing that's not for me is Valve's Auto Chess. I downloaded Underlords, played it, and then fell asleep. It, like, I played the tutorial. I'm sure it's very strategy intensive, but I was like, after the 14th round, I was falling asleep at my phone, which I guess might have had to do with the fact that it was late and I was tired, but still. Have you tried it?
No, it's not my thing.
I mean, I was curious, but anyway, everyone can do it now. You can download it and give it a try. Maybe I'll give it a fairer chance down the line. What else? Epic bought House Party, which is the tool the youngins use to chat when they're playing Fortnite, which is probably a clever move. Amazon Game Studios is not doing so hot. They've fired a bunch of people. They haven't fired them. They've given them 60 days.
Yeah.
No, they told them, you know, if you find jobs inside Amazon, you can move to those jobs.
Right.
So maybe in 60 days they will be let go. But it's more, you know, like Amazon Game Studios had big promises that I'm surprised nothing came out of them. I guess you don't improvise yourself game developer. But they had the right people. It was, I don't know. It's I'm a little bit surprised that in, 2.5 years, literally nothing has come. Because the one game, I can't even remember the name. I tried it. It was fine. they've shut it down or went back to the drawing board or whatever. Yeah. So nothing came out of it. Nothing. It's crazy.
I think that's some of that's reflective of, it's like what you said, you can't enterprise yourself like a game studio, but like, you know, some of these big giant companies that try to get into gaming just aren't really built for it. I mean, you have the big companies that are literally gaming and that's it, or they're gaming publishers, not developers, but you get the idea. But Amazon trying to do a little bit of everything, sometimes a little bit of something is never enough.
Mm. I'll give the counterpoint to that. It's been 2.5 years, I think. Maybe it was more, but some games can take a long time to put together. And they laid off a part of their staff, not all of it. So they might still be working on stuff. They realized some of the things weren't working. It's reorganizing, and we might see stuff, you know, in the next year or two or whatever. They're maybe still working on it. So
maybe, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, I guess not. They also had that big, well, it wasn't a big success, the Lumberyard.
Yeah,
the middleware
AWS thing. Engine thing.
Yeah, it didn't work out. So
yeah.
And lastly, we have some footage from the Monster Hunter movie. Have you seen that?
I didn't know this was for a movie.
Yes.
Oh man.
It is. It is by Paul W.S. Anderson, who made the Resident Evil series, and it also stars Mila Jovovich. And Tony Jaa, who was amazing in Ong Bak, if you remember Ong Bak.
I know.
Well, I mean, it doesn't look... I don't know. I like the Resident Evil movies, but not because they're anything like Resident Evil.
Right.
Just because they're kind of dumb to the point that I like them at this point. And... maybe it's going to be fun, but I don't think it's going to be a very good Monster Hunter thing. Although, it's not like Monster Hunter is very, you know, I don't know. It's not like I'm going to make enemies in the Monster Hunter community.
Yeah, careful.
But I'm going to shut up now. Yeah, and that's it. That is it for this episode of Pixels. Thank you so much for staying with us through the VOIP services woes that we live through. Ed, if people want more from you, where can they go?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Adesis. That will be in the show notes, I'm sure. As far as the other stuff that I do, I'm involved with another gaming podcast called Four Player Network, Four Player Podcast, and it's you can catch us streaming live pretty much every night now and at 4pp.tv. And for me, you can catch me on Wednesdays when I'm not on a 2.5-week vacation. So,
excellent. For me, it's Patrick. No, it's not Patrick. On one word, not Patrick. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, if you want to follow my goings-on in Finland and Paris. And talking about vacation, I'm going to be out on vacation for a few weeks in between July and August, so I might miss a couple of episodes. It's not. I still have another episode or two before that, but I'm telling people early, and we'll be back for Gamescom, but between that, it will be the dead of summer, when I will hopefully, for the first time in many, many years, think about things that aren't work. That will be nice. Although, you know, I'm probably still going to be playing games and checking out tech stuff. So that's the quote-unquote problem when you work in stuff you love and you do anyway.
I'm busy coding an app right now, and I'm like, wait, I'm working while I'm on vacation too. What am I doing with myself?
Basically. But yeah, we'll be back in a couple of weeks for another episode before those vacations, so I hope you check that out. And if you have stuff to say about what we discussed, be it Game Pass or the loot boxes or GOG Galaxy or anything, feel free to go to frenchspin.com in the article for this episode. You'll be able to comment, as of course, as always, and we always appreciate the conversations that happen around this show. So thanks for that, and we will be back in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Have a lovely week. Bye.